Hello, welcome back to the KPMG Financial Reporting Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Tricarci, and our conversation today is about the regulatory outlook for 2025. We're a little over 100 days into President Trump's second term, and it's been, well, let's just say very eventful. Now, obviously, we're not going to get into politics here, but in light of the episode that we did last month on the SEC, I wanted to zoom out and take a look at the regulatory landscape more broadly and talk about what shifts or trends we're expecting to see under this new administration. And joining me today is Amy Matsuo. Amy is the leader of our regulatory insights practice, and she's going to help us unpack the broad themes that are emerging in terms of deregulation and shifting enforcement priorities. We'll talk about how companies can proactively prepare for these changes and maintain compliance in the wake of this very dynamic environment. Then we'll talk about the regulatory forecast for two topics in particular: mergers and acquisitions, and of course, AI. And finally, we'll wrap up our conversation by going over the key headlines for each major industry. Amy Matsuo, welcome to the show. Amy, I gave you a brief introduction in the open, but can you please tell our audience a little bit more about yourself and your background?
Thanks for having me, Nick. Great to be with you. I lead KPMG's Regulatory Insights and Compliance Transformation Solutions and provide insights to clients in the areas of risk, regulatory, and compliance. I've got 30 years of experience in both the industry and consulting, and advise the largest financial services and cross-industry companies. I'm a regular speaker for boards, management committees, industry forums, and the press, and a recipient of the National Consulting Award for Client Service. So great to be with you.
All right. Well, I am certainly glad I asked you that question, because my brief intro did not do it justice, to say the least. So Amy, I want to dive right in. And obviously, deregulation has been front and center for the business community in 2025. You know, Tim Brown and I just did a podcast last month discussing the outlook for the SEC, and deregulation was certainly a key theme of that episode. But deregulation is obviously not unique to the SEC. So I wanted to ask you to just highlight some of the key trends that you're seeing in deregulation that businesses should be aware of.
Sure. There are three notable trends in deregulation right now. The first, I would say, a sharp decrease in new rulemaking, and that was clearly anticipated. That's coming out, obviously, of executive actions and the administration agenda. There was the regulatory freeze pending review period, the 10-to-1 deregulatory initiative, in addition to others. The second area, enforcement activities. So enforcement activities very likely to prioritize violations and the letter of the law. And certainly we're seeing temporary pauses right now in the enforcement area. And the third one, the impact of ongoing agency workforce reductions. So this may cause secondary deregulatory impacts when you think about things like elongated approval processes, for example, the FDA and others, you know, approving the approving cycle. And of course, the potential for supervisory and enforcement focus to also change over time.
Yeah, I mean, so it sounds similar to what Tim and I discussed regarding the SEC specifically. And, you know, it seems like that was really a microcosm of the broader regulatory trends that we're seeing impact all of the agencies, which, you know, obviously makes sense. So I want to dig a little deeper into each of those three areas that you mentioned. And on the first trend of decreased rulemaking, can you just explain what this 10-to-1 deregulation initiative is and how it impacts agencies?
Yeah, absolutely. The 10-to-1 deregulatory initiative, so what was that? That was really to direct agencies proposing or promulgating a new rule, a new regulation, to identify, if you will, kind of 10 existing regulations that can be pulled back or repealed. However, this was done prior with a 4-to-1 kind of goal, and that wasn't achieved at that time. So 10-to-1 is a high metric. It's imperative to note that despite, you know, what is clearly going to be kind of this downward trend in issuing of new rules, that the old regulations still apply. So existing regulations still stand and clearly require ongoing compliance efforts. So deregulatory doesn't mean no regulation.
So Amy, this 10-to-1 initiative, it reminds me of something from my childhood. I won't say my exact age, but when I was little, I was obsessed with my pacifier. Like, I know a lot of kids like their pacifier, but I took it to the next level. You know, my mom said I would carry around like 5 at a time. You know, I'd have one in my mouth and then I'd put the pacifier like in between my fingers and I would just walk around with, 5 pacifiers. And my parents couldn't do anything to get me to give them up. So my mom, being the genius that she is, came up with this plan and this story. And she told me that if I traded in 10 of my pacifiers, like, yeah, I had more than 10. If I traded in 10 at Toys R Us, they would give me a free Ninja Turtle action figure. And so apparently the only thing I was more obsessed with at the time than my pacifier was the Ninja Turtles, because that's exactly what I did. Like, overnight, we literally put the pacifiers into Ziploc bags. My mom drove us to Toys R Us. You know, she had arranged all of this ahead of time, hands the Ziploc bag of pacifiers to the cashier, and the cashier gives me, you know, my Donatello action figure. And I never looked back. You know, I was good to go at that point. And, you know, full circle moment, you know, some 30 odd years later, when I had my son, he also liked his passy quite a bit. And we did the same strategy. We told him, if you trade it in, you can get a toy. And so this kind of reminds me of that. We'll see if these federal agencies are as motivated as a little kid, you know, trying to get a new toy. Call me skeptical, for one, personally. I think what we're going to end up seeing, like you said, is a significant slowdown, or maybe just pause altogether in terms of, you know, new federal rulemaking. But I guess with that, Amy, you know, is the expectation here that the states are going to start to step in a little bit more?
Yes, we will likely see an uptick in states stepping where there is a real or perceived to be a real lack or pullback in federal regulations. So that's when states step in, right? So recent executive orders, such as Unleashing American Energy, direct agencies to conduct reviews of jurisdictional regulations, and anything that may appear to have a potential negative impact on key U.S. Sectors.
Got it. And the other thing you mentioned there in your initial response is that deregulation doesn't mean no regulation. So with that, I wanted to pivot to the second trend that you mentioned, which is enforcement. And I want to ask you to explain, you know, what do we expect to see on the enforcement front in the year ahead?
It's important to remember that the law is still the law, as I kind of indicated before. So regardless of any shifts in supervision, investigations, or enforcements, there's also nothing to say that that couldn't shift again very, very quickly. So in the interim, as this change is occurring, in many cases, the inherent risk for those regulations, while the enforcement attention or the investigation attention may not be there, the inherent risk for those actually increases as a result of that. And so that's very important for companies to kind of recognize and be sure to address in their risk mitigation policies, their practices, their monitoring, that you got to watch those inherent risks and making sure that you are staying on top of the mitigation of those.
Okay. And that actually seems like a great segue into my next question, which is, Amy, if I'm a company listening to this podcast, what should I be doing to prepare for this shift that we're seeing in the regulatory environment?
In anticipation of these impacts, organizations really should do a couple things. They should proactively review their risk and compliance programs, certainly continue to invest in the right data analytics and monitoring tools. Another area I mentioned, you know, kind of communicate your commitments. So again, some of those inherent risks are actually increasing right now in this regulatory space. Communicate your commitments out to your employees, out to your third parties. So areas like FCPA, ethics, inclusive work values, those commitments and values of your company. Certainly continue to do your BAU. So your business as usual, right? Your risk and compliance, adherence and monitoring, continue to adhere to the law, but also consider those areas of potential changes And so where do you have changes in sort of inherent risks, risk weightings that you may need to take, you know, another look at, you know, given the environment? And as this regulatory landscape really shifts, there's also going to be an opening to focus actually on much more proactive process efficiency, automation investment.
So speaking of shifts, I now want to shift our conversation, Amy, and I want to ask you about some specific topics. And I want to start with mergers and acquisitions, or M&A. And I know you can't comment on the economic outlook for M&A. We're going to actually do a separate episode on that this summer, where we'll take a look at, you know, M&A activity over the first half of the year, what trends we're seeing, what we expect to happen over the second half of the year. So, you know, for the listeners, stay tuned for that. But Amy, at least as it relates to the regulatory side of mergers and acquisitions, can you just comment on what we're expecting to see from this new administration?
Yeah, in the area of M&A, when it comes to mergers and acquisitions, the prior expectation was that the FTC and DOJ would be lenient toward M&A transactions in sort of the current administration, current environment. However, they are stating that they will review mergers based on obviously existing law and case law. And so actually there's no immediate changes to some of those guidelines. Companies generally like stability, predictability, clarity. In periods of uncertainty, it just makes things, you know, sort of much more difficult. So that stability, predictability, clarity, that's inclusive of M&A periods. So the regulatory element to M&A is, of course, just that. It's one element. In regulatory, I think we can expect, though, a couple things. The potential adoption of a kind of a more nimble and predictable approach, specifically for de novo formation and M&A. A continued focus on anti-monopoly, anti-competitive transactions, conduct protection of workers, and a desire by regulators just overall across these agencies to shorten the approval processes for M&A. And the question is really going to be, you know, whether that can be achieved, and particularly with some of the reductions that have happened to the workforce, you know, can that reduction of the approval process happen, particularly since this is a desired outcome?
Yeah, I think we're all hoping for a little more stability and predictability these days. You know, the next topic I wanted to ask you about, Amy, is AI. Of course, can't, you know, do a podcast without talking about AI. And this is another area that many companies have been heavily investing in. But the one thing that I haven't quite figured out yet is what exactly is the regulatory situation with respect to AI?
In terms of AI, AI is an interesting example where there is a perception to be a lack of federal regulations. And so where again, there's a perception of a lack of federal, the states step in. There's been an increasing patchwork of state laws and regulation because of that. And so as of March 2025, you've got over 900 AI-related bills across the states. The bills include sector-specific bills. So in automated decision-making tools, for example, automated systems making healthcare decisions. You've got larger AI framework bills introduced in New York and Virginia, kind of modeling off of the Colorado law.
900 different AI-related bills across the states. That sounds like extremely daunting, because I'm sure there's going to be differences, you know, between the states. And so just staying on top of not only the activity, but the differences between the frameworks, you know, sounds like a full-time job for somebody. And that doesn't even include the global AI regulations that I know are out there. So it kind of feels like ESG and what companies have been going through over the last couple of years on that. And, you know, speaking of global regulations, this is the third area I wanted to ask you about, Amy. Like, is any of this stuff that we're seeing in the United States with respect to deregulation and a pullback on rulemaking, are we starting to see that same sort of thing materialize overseas?
Yeah, global pressures, the administration is implementing its agenda, but there's growing pressures also being voiced relative to foreign regulators, potentially to pare down some of the global or jurisdictional regulations and some economic policy coming behind that, right, where it's deemed to potentially negatively impact U.S. companies. So a pressure there on the global and to certain jurisdictions relative to their deregulatory efforts.
I mentioned ESG earlier, and I'll mention it again here because I think it's a good example of this is, you know, recently we've seen the European Union take significant steps to scale back some of its climate and ESG related regulations. And if you're not familiar with that, I would encourage you to check out our podcast series that covers all things sustainability. It's called The Sustainability Report. We put out a lot of good thoughtware as it relates to some of the recent activity that we've seen in 2025. And Amy, the reason I wanted to ask about those three topics in particular is because I read your article series called, you know, The First 100 Days, Regulatory Signals. And great series. You know, I love how you dive into every industry and you talk about what we've seen from a legislative perspective, executive orders, and then try to get into what's on the horizon. And I want to get into those industries here in a minute. But those three topics seem to be common themes across many, if not all, of the industries that we're seeing. So before we, you know, dive into some of the industry specific headlines or takeaways, is there anything else from that article series that you want to highlight for our listeners, you know, broadly?
Well, considering the fact that so far there's been sort of a historic over 100 in 100 days executive orders being issued, there's also over 40 bills introduced into Congress in both House and State. Not bills, actually 40 different rules that are under those different bills that are being introduced. So over 40 rules in the process of being repealed. There's definitely a huge shift in the regulatory environment and the volume of just staying on top of all of this activity. It is really pretty overwhelming at times, I think, for companies, both in the direct application of those executive actions and orders, as well as the indirect implications that those might have. So RegInsights did issue out, we've issued a first 100 days regulatory signals that covers executive and agency actions for companies. We did that on an industry by industry basis to look at specific industries. We also are doing that now in terms of specific topics. So those are a great resource to really go and look at to give signals around this uncertainty amidst rapid change in the reg environment.
Yeah, I really enjoyed reading them and I really love that they're organized by industry. I think that's how a lot of people follow the news and want to see how their company, their industry is being impacted. So what I wanted to do now was spend a few minutes and give our listeners a crash course on that series of articles that you wrote in case they haven't seen it. So what I want to do is I'm going to throw out an industry and I want you to give me the key headlines and we'll do this lightning round style. Let's start with healthcare and life sciences.
Yeah, thank you. Well, in terms of healthcare and life science, new leadership, obviously at HHS, FDA, CMS, DOJ. So that's going to really quickly reprioritize agency objectives, regulatory focus, enforcement activities, certainly in line with the administrative priorities and executive orders.
All right. What about private equity?
In private equity, we're anticipating future supervision and enforcement is likely to focus on the evidence of investor harm and bad actors. And in addition, a redirection of those enforcements. So when you think about areas like FCPA, crypto digital assets, for example.
All right, the next one on my list is energy.
In energy, a flurry of regulatory withdrawals. So you saw EPA's pretty historic reconsideration of 31 regulations announced. It's particularly related to climate, GHG emissions, and that's going to likely continue and increase some global divergences in the energy and environment space.
All right, next industry, near and dear to my heart, industrial manufacturing and automotive.
For industrial manufacturing and auto, an increase of federal and state regulatory divergence. So when you think again about workplace safety, climate-related laws and regulations, but also anticipate the continuation and expanded use of tariffs. So certainly seeing that, sanctions, potentially even bans, right, inclusive of sector-specific and tech-related products and services in this space.
I was wondering how long we were going to go before the word tariff was mentioned. Seems to be the word of the year, to say the least. And in addition to everything that we're seeing in the news, which, you know, we're not going to get into here, we've been getting a ton of questions on the accounting implications on tariffs. So we're actually going to do a whole separate episode on that in the next month or so. So for our listeners, make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss out as we share the latest on what we're seeing on that front. But Amy, let's keep going with our industries. And the next one on my list is consumer and retail.
For consumer and retail, really a modification, potentially elimination of duty-free de minimis exemption following the review of related tariff losses. I mentioned tariff before, again, tariff kind of hitting this area and risks. When you think about things like counterfeit goods and contraband drugs, furthermore, there's likely to be a quick and expanded use of enforcement in areas like import controls and certainly immigration.
What about the industry that always seems to be in the news, especially these days, and that's technology? And maybe I'll throw in media and telecom in there as well.
For technology, media, telecom space, a continued rapid reprioritized agency statements. So you see kind of these agency leaderships coming out with statements and investigations, areas like public funding, content moderation policies, and associated very quick industry actions being taken in this space to try to mitigate some of those changes.
And last, but certainly not least, Amy, what are we expecting to see for the financial services industry?
Certainly. And in terms of financial services, future supervision and enforcement, you're hearing this again through some of the agency, new agency leadership statements, to focus on what they're defining as core financial risk. And so we're going to see a shift there in some of the focus. But what I would caution here is that going back to the states and the state AGs, very likely to be more active in areas, for example, like consumer protections.
All right. Well, I think we covered them all. You know, Amy, with that, I just want to thank you for being here. I know you've got a ton going on and always helpful to talk to you and get the big picture in terms of, you know, what the regulatory landscape looks like and what companies can be doing now to prepare and you know, how to maybe look around the corner, so to speak, at least as much as that's possible these days. So with that, Amy, just want to say thanks for joining and appreciate you being on.
Thank you for listening. And if you enjoyed this episode, which I hope you did, please give us 5 stars and make sure you subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you listen to podcasts. We've got some really great content coming up that you will not want to miss. And in the meantime, you can check out our website at frv.kpmg.us. We've got some really great materials on whatever financial reporting topic you're interested in. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.